This podcast is supported by Tourism Ireland. Experience all of what Northern Ireland has to offer, from standing on the rocks of the Giant's Causeway to hiking the Mourne Mountains with epic sea views, or enjoying the crack in Belfast City's great pubs with some live music. With amazing access from Great Britain by both air and sea, Northern Ireland is so easy to get to. To find your next adventure, visit ireland.com/Northern Ireland.
Hello and welcome to the National Trust podcast. I'm Kate Martin, and today we're exploring the north coast of Northern Ireland. We'll be heading to a centuries-old rope bridge, once vital for its community, and discovering the history of the fishermen at Carrickarede. I'm really excited to be heading out on our adventure today. Carrickarede has been on my bucket list for ages. It often pops up on Instagram or TikTok, and each time I see it, I get a real pang of jealousy for the people who are going there. So the idea of seeing it for myself is just fantastic. I'm just packing my bags ready, making sure I've got all the essentials. I'm sure there's something I've forgotten, but it really is time to go. I'm travelling from Belfast to Ballintoy, where the Carrickarede rope bridge is. It's taking roughly about an hour or so, but it's really good if you want to do a bit of a city break and then have a bit of nature as well. It's all nice and close and compact. We're heading north along the scenic coastal route, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's a bit of a grey day today, but the sea is already looking gorgeous. I can see islands in the distance as well. And then on my other side, I've got these beautiful rolling hills covered in gorse, which is in full bloom at the moment. It's such a beautiful place, and I'm really looking forward to my adventure today. So I've just arrived, and I'm going to drop off my bags here at the neighbouring National Trust Holiday Cottage, which looks out over the cliffs into the bays. Along this stretch of coastline are some gorgeous walks, a few hidden gems for food and drink in the local towns, and we're only a stone's throw from one of the most famous landmarks in the world, the Giant's Causeway. It's also, so I'm told, only one of two sites in Northern Ireland to have been designated a dark sky discovery status, when on clear nights outside of the summer, when the evenings are at their darkest, you get absolutely gorgeous views of our galaxy, and even the Aurora Borealis can be seen from here. I've got a short walk down the hill to what looks like the entrance to Carrickarede, where I've arranged to meet a local tour guide called Mark Rogers, and he heads up a special tour concocted alongside the team here called Beyond the Bridge, an experience that's going to help me immerse myself in the history of the landscape and the world of industry here. And that sounds right up my street. Hello, you must be Mark.
Good morning, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm good. I'm Mark Rogers. Kate.
Pleased to meet you, Kate. Very delighted to welcome you to Carrickarede, the National Trust property here on the North Antrim coast. And there's a few people who would like you to meet when you're here.
Brilliant.
So we'll go and get introduced to Jennifer and Billy.
Fantastic.
How's that? Is that okay?
That sounds great. Let's go.
All right.
With a warm and characteristic hello, Mark wastes no time in introducing me to the team like a group of long-lost friends.
Good morning, Billy. How
are
you
morning,
doing?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
A few people introduced you to you. Here's Kate.
Hello, nice to meet you.
This is Billy McCall, the site manager, and Jen, who is a mixture of roles, but selling me around the world, so she's very busy.
Nice. Hello, Jen.
Hi, nice to meet you.
We're here to go for a dander and do Beyond the Bridge. So are you coming with us, or are you going to stay in out of the rain like always?
I'll just remain out of the rain, but enjoy your day. You're in safe hands with Mark.
Thanks very much. And then the tour begins, starting with some rather unusual wildlife.
What I would normally do at this point is welcome you to Carrickarede and explain what Carrickarede actually means.
Oh.
So it's an Irish term, and Carrickarede means the rock in the road. So if you look down to your right, my left, what you will see, coming in from the ocean, a hump and a bump, and then the head of the crocodile.
Ah.
And then the body of the crocodile, more or less, is Carrickarede. That's the rock that was in the road of salmon migrating home from the Atlantic Ocean into our local rivers to spawn and have their young. Since the early parts of the 1600s, Lord Antrim, who owned the site in those days, had his men fish off the corner, nets out into the path of the salmon, pull the net to the shore and catch as many fish as you possibly can. But the men always knew if someday, somehow, they could get on to Carrickaread, they would catch many more fish. What's happening? The tide's carrying the salmon across the shore. The tide's hitting against the rock. It's causing turbulence in the water and the salmon were confused. And they used to gather there in that bay en masse. So the whole history of this site predominantly is about salmon fishing from the early 1600s.
Today, it's home to some fabulous views, but the Carrickaread fishing community was built by people from all corners of this vast stretch of coastline.
We're right up in the northeast. We're in the right-hand corner of Northern Ireland. So looking out from here today, what we can see on the horizon, very plainly, Islay and Dura. And those are, of course, in the Scottish Hebrides.
Yep.
The main focus of our attention, island-wise, Rathlin. And Rathlin is from Northern Ireland. It's an Irish territory. And then to the right of that, the two high rises are the Baps of Dura, and you're going right down into the Mull of Kintyre. So you can see now when I'm going to explain to you that the plantation of Ulster in the 1600s brought lots of people from Scotland to reside in this part of the world. Mm-hmm. And it basically is their descendants who made this the economic industry that it became. Salmon fishing, quarrying, and in later day, Game of Thrones. So come on, we'll go for a walk, huh? Now we know where we're at.
Yeah.
We have a lot in common, the Scots and the Irish. Our language is very similar. And if you can consider between here, the islands that we're looking out at today, they spoke a mixture of both Irish and Scots Gaelic. And it was called Gaeltacht. And when the language nearly had died out on the shore here, the people from Rathlin taught the Antrim people again their own language. So we are very close to the Scottish version of our language.
As we continue our dander along the chalky coastline, Mark pauses to show me a sign and a picture of times gone by.
This is nice to stop and look at. I love to show people this because you have already met Billy McCaw this morning. This is Billy's daddy. The man in this photograph is Anthony McCaw. And Anthony was one of the last fishermen here at the site, at Carrickaread. So Billy vividly remembers as a boy frequent visits down to the rope bridge and onto the island. And he claims that his brother and him would have had a race below the bridge like Tarzan. I'm not going to argue with him and I don't want him to actually replicate that.
The bridge in the photograph is so evocative and a real window into the past. It shows the rope bridge made up of just a few rickety wooden boards and lengths of rope to hold up the weight of the fishermen like Billy's dad, their catch, and also the weight of their own determination. Today's modern rope bridge is thankfully a lot more sturdy, or at least I'm hoping so. As we round the cliffs line in the bay, I catch my first glimpse. It's there that we meet a couple of guides who Mark says hello to and hands over his walking stick, affectionately named after a famous children's nanny, as we get ready for the crossing.
Can I leave Mary Poppins with you? She doesn't cross the bridge.
Thank you.
Just take your time and be careful. For my money, this is the only disconcerting part. These steps are quite steep. They are slippy on occasions, so just take your time and walk down here gently. When we get to the bottom, I'll show you how to cross the bridge. All right? So just take your time. Between here and the island, 67 feet. And the drop from the bridge down below, 98 feet. So to cross the bridge, what you do, place a hand on either of the two handrails.
Yep.
Now wait till your knuckles turn white. And as soon as your knuckles turn white, you're ready
to go. You're good to go.
So what you do, hold up your head. Whatever you do, Jesus, don't look down. All right? One big step and the momentum will take you across the bridge. Anybody coming towards you, man, woman, children, throw them over. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We'll get them later. Now, there's a real rush of euphoria when you get to our side. It doesn't last long because, of course, the realisation is you have
You've
to come back. So I'm going across first and then I'll be on you in our side. I tend to make the bridge bounce because I'm old and fat. So what you have to do is give me time to get over and I'll meet you over there.
Fair enough. So I'm going to head over the rope bridge now. It does look a little bit Indiana Jones. I'm assured it's safe, so hopefully we're going to be fine. And you can actually hear, as I'm walking across, you can hear the birds crying and looking over to sort of Carrick-a-Reed. I can actually see a pair of fulmars kissing as they're nesting. I can see some of the little auks, possibly guillemots or razorbills out at sea as well. So my feeling is if the birds think it's safe, then it's safe. So I'm going to grab both sides, wait till my knuckles go white, and go for it. I know Mark said not to look down, but I have to say I'm pretty good with heights. It's a bouncy bridge for certain, and it is a very, very steep drop down. Woo! Don't trip over. And now we're over the other side. And yes, you're right, I do feel ecstatic being over here. Not because I'm worried about going back.
The view.
But just looking at the view, the colour of that sea, even on a day like today where it's relatively grey.
Yeah.
The greens and the blues of that water is spectacular.
I always think in my mind's eye, this is the island that people imagine they're going to see before they get here.
Yes.
You know, the high rocky cliffs, the power and majesty of that, the ocean and the noise and the calming effect of the noise of the waves. You have sea pinks, which are called thrift.
Thrift, yeah.
You have yellow rattle. You have campions. That's a campion starting there, white and pink campion. So the colour on this bank's fabulous. There's a few little primroses just dying away. So it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But this is lovely. You can see the caves.
Oh,
and that's
yes.
why it's called Port Anevia, the Bay of the Caves.
Nice.
What we see now on occasions, people will come around here in kayaks and canoes. They'll actually go under the bridge and then they'll explore the caves. So that's another new part of our tourism here. And it's great to see people doing different things and exploring it a different way. But the view here is just majestic. The white tip just off the corner is called Kinban.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's just a little
yeah.
blip. That's so
strange. And if you were there and followed that inland, you would see the remnants of an old MacDonald castle there at Kinban as well. So you would, yeah. So the shore is littered with history. And this is what makes this journey much more difficult than anybody else. We are always aware of the esteemed traveller who wants to do something authentic, genuine and real. So we think it doesn't get any more authentic or genuine than this. So once we come across the bridge, your adventure really starts. Now you're going beyond the bridge. Mm. And we're going down into the cottage. So let's go. Just take our time getting down. And then I'll follow you and close this all up again.
Oh, lovely, thank you.
A small stony set of stairs leads the way down to the small and unassuming cottage. This is typically off limits to regular guests, but for people on tours like Mark's, this is an opportunity to see the daily lives of the fishermen up close.
What do you notice straight away? How calm it is.
Yes. Now we're in the kind of lee, aren't we? We're in a little hollow.
You're really in out of the way. So initially, the bridge was built in 1755. The men would have either walked across the bridge or rowed round in a boat. And on a daily basis, they would have anchored the net right in the bay in front of us. So if we consider, in those days, salmon were so plentiful, you could have stood on the cliff pass and actually watched them migrating home. The average catch would have been somewhere around 250 to 300 salmon a day.
Wow.
So if you consider we were doing that here from about the latter part of the 1700s right through the 1800s, it really was towards the end of that it started to decline. Mm-hmm. The 1900s, you see it really starting to decline, and then by 2002, it's no longer a viable industry. And when we only managed to catch 250 salmon, quite rightly the government said, boys, that's it, over.
With the decline of the fishing industry, the cottage now remains as a time capsule.
So let me show you what we're doing. This is the store. Now, remember I said this was built in 1780s. Mm-hmm. So Irishmen in those days were a great deal smaller than I am today. So please mind your head coming in and just give your eyes a little minute or two to adjust to the darkness. All right. So here we are. Come on in.
Wow.
Wow, that's right. This is left the way it was in 2002 when the industry came to a halt. And basically, I'm going to tell you the story of the man who closed the doors and called it goodbye. So what we have hanging here, this is living history.
Yeah.
There's nothing like this on the island of Ireland. There's nowhere else on Ireland you have to cross a rope bridge to get to a fisherman's bothy and to see this remnants of an industry. Numerous nets hanging up here, of course, towards the back, the old rope nets, mm-hmm. towards the front, more modern-day nylon nets. And you can see already, I'm at a height, and you can see that it runs down and out the front door.
Yes.
The rationale, you want your nets to dry, and you don't want the room to smell. So the water simply runs down and out the front door. So again, good common sense approach, good entrepreneurial skills. So once they had the store built, they thought, we'll just keep going, lads, and we'll build ourselves a wee shelter.
Next to the store is a small and cosy shelter that instantly acts as time travel back to a time when the men would have been catching some rest.
Where do you see this? This is my house. Come on into my house. Come on, do you see this? Now, look at this. Now, this is amazing.
Oh, so you've got a fireplace.
Yes, the only sort of leeway to any sort of comfort at all, an open fireplace. Because there's no electric, there's no gas. But if you look around you here, basically nothing has changed here. The way we see it today is the way it was.
Looking around here, you know, there just seems to be all stages of history because obviously we've got some, you know, what looks like quite old gear. But then looking up just above the fireplace, there's an old radio.
Yeah, the transistor.
I would have had one similar to that. You know, it's a relatively plastic modern one. Yeah. And then obviously the sort of old gas stove, which obviously made a cup of tea. And those saws could probably do with a bit of WD-40, I reckon.
I ask questions about them and they're quite right. Boil a potato, get the frying pan on. That's what that was for.
Nice.
The radio or the transistor, as they would have talked about, or the wireless on occasions, the news and the weather.
Yeah, the shipping forecast.
The weather in particular is a huge thing.
So if there was a day, if there was a day when the weather conditions weren't right, would they bother of even coming over here?
Why?
They would still have done it.
They would have come over simply because, number one, they felt the need to be here. Mm-hmm. They would have come down here, I would have found something to do.
Yeah.
So they would have came here all the time.
And would they have been paid sort of per amount of fish, or would they have been paid a sort of standard wage regardless of how much they caught?
A standard salary.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, that fluctuated when they formed their own cooperative in the early 1970s. The trust still have the license and hold on to that to protect it, which is great.
Yeah.
Because somebody else had it, they might try and start fishing again. But all through their working lives and all through the histories, they got a meagre wage from the gentry. And then when they were forming their own cooperative, then that's when they could make money, but it was up and down. Yeah. Some weeks you had a great catch, other weeks you hadn't.
So what would they have done outside of the salmon fishing season?
They lived very much the way nature intended. You know, spring's the new life.
Yeah.
The hawthorn trees are white, salmon's coming home, it's time to get out of bed and go and fish.
Yeah.
The good weather in the summertime was ideal conditions to be fishing in. Then as the leaves turn colour, you're starting to feel jaded yourself and you're getting ready for a rest. So the winter comes and you hibernate.
Yeah.
So they would have lived very seasonally, you know, off the land and off the sea. And I think people are going back to that. I think people are starting to realise that's a better way to live, you know.
Certainly when it comes to food, you speak using a lot more seasonal. So what did the families do? I mean, you're thinking about this, sort of the wives. Did they play any part in the salmon fishery, or were they they were at home looking after the kids?
On a busy day, particularly in school holidays, wives and kids would have been here, mostly up at the first station ice house.
Yeah.
So they're involved there, carrying maybe men coming over the bridge and carrying the salmon up the steps to the ice house. So that was all had been, the families were involved at that juncture. So yeah, it became quite a family industry.
I think what people connect to is people. The human, I suppose the human experience. We all know what it's like to be human.
Yeah.
If my family were here now,
yeah,
or here then, what would they would have been?
Probably,
you know, the fishermen and the farmers, or yeah, you know, they wouldn't have been the,
yeah,
they certainly wouldn't have been the lord of the manor. And I think that's what people connect to, is that kind of, you know, people like them, I guess.
It's not about where you lay your head. It's not about what you eat, because you can do that anywhere in the world. It's connecting with a rich, eclectic culture of the place. And the only way you're going to do that in reality is to get to know local people.
Yeah.
So if you spend 2 hours of my time and I lift the lid and you get a look at our culture and our history and our heritage, you're walking away with here thinking, that was worth my while. That journey really mattered to me. And you're taking that message away.
Yeah, it's really, really special.
Good. I'm glad you like it.
I can't tell you what an experience this has been.
It was my pleasure. It was lovely meeting you. And it was even more lovely than that to take you down and show you Carrick Read and tell you this wonderful story. So thank you very much for coming, Cora Margaret. Thank you.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Thank
Go
you.
And enjoy your dram. I want one now. Just walking home now, back along the coastal path towards the holiday cottage where I'm staying, and I am in complete awe of the day that I've had. There is so much to see here and so much to explore. I think I might just go and put my feet up for a bit, have a bit of a rest, and then go down to one of the local pubs and then home again for some stargazing. There is so much to see and explore here on the beautiful north coast of Ireland. Join me next time as I continue my Northern Ireland adventure and explore the depths of the Irish Sea. That episode will be out in a few weeks' time, so make sure to subscribe or follow this podcast to be the first to hear it. And while you're there, leave a comment or join in to chat with us on Spotify or by emailing podcasts@nationaltrust.org.uk. For more information on Carrick Read and to find out about the experiences on offer, make sure to have a look at the links in our show notes or visit nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. Until next time, from me, Kate Martin, goodbye.
This podcast is supported by Tourism Ireland. Experience all of what Northern Ireland has to offer, from standing on the rocks of the Giant's Causeway to hiking the Mourne Mountains with epic sea views, or enjoying the crack in Belfast City's great pubs with some live music. With amazing access from Great Britain by both air and sea, Northern Ireland is so easy to get to. To find your next adventure, visit ireland.com/Northern Ireland.